I'm Mark Brazell, and this is Cincinnati Edition. Thanks for tuning in. A little later this afternoon, the fastest 2 minutes in sports, as the Kentucky Derby will race at Churchill Downs. And Louisville, Kentucky, just down the highway. And on this Derby day, while we mash the mint and pour the bourbon for those mint juleps, I thought I'd look for a bit of a different perspective. And I found that perspective in Claire Balding, award-winning broadcaster with the BBC, doing their horse racing coverage beginning back in 1998, has done Olympics and so much more, and is also a writer. Her first book out in stores now is called My Animals and Other Family. It's a somewhat of a different memoir. I have Claire Balding on the phone this morning to chat a bit about horses and more. Good morning, Claire.
Morning, Mark.
I have to say, as I was reading this memoir, and there are many memoirs flying through the air these days, that I was fascinated by your approach, that you are really looking at your animals first, and your family just kind of comes along for the ride in your new book.
But that's the story of my family life. You know, the animals are at the center of it, and they get the most attention, and they get the best care. So it sort of made sense to me to lead with the animals and use the animals as a way of framing each chapter and telling stories, you know, that kind of make sense to that period of my life through the different animals that I had. So it was a fun way to do it, and obviously racehorses come into it, but so did dogs, boxer dogs, lurchers, you know, the animals that we had around us.
And they provided you not only with companionship, but some life lessons along the way, too.
I think they did. And I mean, do you have animals, Mark?
Oh, yes, indeed, I do, Claire.
I think you learn things from your cats and your dog all the time. From cats, I think you probably learn that actually, you know, in a cat's life, whatever we do doesn't really bother them. I think they live their very self-contained, rather aloof life, saying, yeah, if you're stupid enough to feed me, then go ahead. Whereas the dog tends to give you all the attention and desperately wants to be where you are and wants you to play with him and all those things. They're very, very different. And horses are interesting because I think with horses, we're trying so much to develop a team. You know, you've got to have teamwork going on. And with a beast that's much bigger than you and much heavier than you and much stronger than you, how you learn to negotiate with it, you know, to make it want to do the things you want to do. And that's not a bad lesson as a child. That's going to take you right through life. And in my industry, you know, working in television and radio, coaxing things out of people that I'm interviewing or trying to get on the shows that I want to get on, you know, whether it's working on the Olympics or whatever, you, that kind of diplomatic skill that I learned with horses has seen me through a lot of work crises as well.
Well, you started out with your dog Candy in the beginning, yeah, of the book, and then each chapter is named after one of your dogs or horses, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to speak with you today, because it really was the horses that were teaching, as you were just mentioning, teaching those lessons in life, and all because your father was a racehorse trainer. So you grew up with, what, 100 racehorses on a farm?
Yeah. My brother now trains, and he has about 180 horses. And my father took over from my mother's father, so from my maternal grandfather, and then he just happened to marry his late boss's daughter. Quite convenient, really. But he trained for a variety of owners, including Paul Mellon, you know, huge American philanthropist who had this massive art collection that you, pretty much any art gallery you go to in the States, you'll see works of art donated by Paul Mellon. And he owned a horse called Milreef. And Milreef won in 1971, won the Derby, the Eclipse, the King George, and the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. And he was the first horse ever to win those four races in one season. And then the following year, he was kept in training, and he broke his leg on the gallops. And he was saved by an American vet who was flown over. And Paul Mellon said, I don't care what it costs, you save him. And they did an operation that allowed his leg to mend enough that he had a very happy retirement and he became a very successful stallion. He could never race again. But a lot of horses in the UK, you know, for the next 20 years, good horses were sired by Milreef, or their dam sire was Milreef. You know, his bloodline is very, very strong in European racing, and I think over here as well. And Paul Mellon had very good horses here, and I think he won the Kentucky Derby. I'm sure he did towards the end of his life. But he was an amazing, amazing man, incredibly generous to us as kids. But my father also trained for some very successful businessmen in America and Canada, and he trained for the Queen.
I was going to say, so, you know, part of your upbringing was lunch with the Queen.
breakfast market.
Oh, breakfast, excuse
generally.
Me.
The Queen. I have since had lunch with the Queen, but as a child it was breakfast. She'd come in the mornings to see her horses, maybe once or twice a year. And then, yeah, she'd come in for breakfast with us. And my father forgot to tell me one year that she was going to be there. So I came crashing in through the dining room door, you know, in my scruffy jobbers and my smelly socks. And there was the Queen sitting at the head of the table. So I made a bit of a faux pas. I didn't curtsy or anything. I just went and helped myself to breakfast. And I was going through a stage at the time, because I'd spent a bit of time over here in the States with my father's family, who are American. I don't know whether it's still a popular delicacy, but I was rather taken by the habit of eating sausages with toast and marmalade. But the way to do it properly is to cut the sausage long ways, you know, so you've got two long half pieces of sausage on either side of your piece of toast. And the trouble with cutting a sausage long ways is it's quite slippery. And unfortunately, as I was trying to cut the sausage long ways, it shot out off my plate and across the table.
At the Queen.
The Queen. At the Queen. Straight at the Queen.
I had to say, when you brought up that little episode, I had to laugh out loud when I was reading it. Because it was just, I could just imagine. And you went, even though you did forget to curtsy and show the proper courtesy, you just rolled right through like a naive young girl.
Exactly. Just snatch the sausage, take it back, you know, get on with eating it.
Well, horse racing in Britain is very different from here in the U.S. I like the little anecdote about how your brother, when he went to boarding school and was asked how many seasons there are, he said two.
He said two. Flat and National Hunt, which are two racing seasons. And he couldn't understand why that wasn't the right answer.
Growing up,
the seasons of the year.
but what do you observe in, you know, your role as a broadcaster and the difference between horse racing in the United States and, say, the Kentucky Derby with all the pomp and circumstance with the horse racing in Britain?
Well, one of the things I like about racing in America is that you tend not to have so much of a dress code. You know, we have fairly strict dress codes, and I don't agree with turning people away from an enclosure at the races because they're not wearing the right thing. I think there are certain festivals, certain meetings where dressing up is part of it. So Royal Ascot, obviously, where you have to wear a hat in the Royal Enclosure, and there are very strict rules about covering your shoulders and having a dress that is sort of only just above the knee rather than little hot pants, you know.
Yes.
Fine for some of the festival meetings, but I think at some of the other meetings they could be a bit more relaxed. But one of the things, and you may have read in the news, there was a big scandal in the UK because Sheikh Mohammed's yard, one of his yards, his private trainer, was found guilty of doping offences, of using anabolic steroids in a sort of swoop test by our governing body, the BHA. They came in and they tested all his horses and found 11 of them to be positive for anabolic steroids, and he's been banned for 8 years. Effectively, it's ended his career, and Sheikh Mohammed is busy picking up the pieces and trying to, you know, make sure that all his other horses are clean. I mean, it's terribly embarrassing for him because he's been a very outspoken opponent of drug use in racing, and he has said about the Breeders' Cup in America that he wants it drug-free. And as you know, it varies from state to state in America as to what you're allowed to use and what's allowed on race day. But I think we're moving towards a position with international racing where we've got to have worldwide rules, because you can't have an international race meeting like the Breeders' Cup or the Melbourne Cup Festival in Australia that has a lot of English runners, or the Royal Ascot where Australian runners come over, American horses come over, or the Dubai World Cup. You can't have that without having global rules. So I just wonder whether in the next year or so, this horrible incident for Sheikh Mohammed might end up being a trigger point, you know, that this might bring in a few hard and fast rules. Because of breeding from racehorses, you don't want to be breeding from animals that have raced on medication, because you're breeding a weaker animal. If it's reliant on medication, you're not getting the true beast, you know, you're not getting what it's truly capable of, and it can mask a lot of weaknesses. So there are some people in the UK that are quite reluctant to use American stallions because of them knowing that they have probably raced on drugs. So it is a problem, and it's one that I hope will work towards a solution rather than just becoming the norm. You know, I'd hate to think that we were breeding thoroughbreds now that are less capable than they were 20, 30 years ago. They should be more capable. And they should be drug-free. To be able to prove that, you've got to be racing drug-free.
Well, your book, My Animals and Other Family, a runaway number one bestseller in the UK, now published in the US, I know I found it fascinating, but do you think there's anything in it you need to explain to U.S. audiences that the British audiences would have understood as they you shared your stories?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, there probably are turns of phrase that I use that are very British, but a lot of British books have done well over here. British films have done well. I mean, hell, if you watch Downton Abbey and you understand it and enjoy it, you'll get my book. there are elements of Downton Abbey about it, and I think my grandmother is a character within it who's quite similar to the Maggie Smith character
yes,
in Downton. You know, and there is a bit of the upstairs, downstairs. But because racing is such a it's a sport that crosses all social boundaries, I think it's an interesting reflection of British society. But also there's a fair amount of American content in it because I had so much American family. And there's an episode where we come over to a wedding in Denver, Colorado, and get kicked out of a hotel because my brother has nits. I mean, it's, the room is completely sealed off and they're burning all the bedding. I mean, it was like a murder scene or something. Come back and there's all this tape across the door and it's because he had nits. I hope it's a book that will make you laugh and in parts make you cry and make you relate your own relationship, Mark, with your dog and your cats. You'll have been thinking about that while you were reading it. And I think that's I hope that's the major point of it, that it becomes your story as well as mine. And I've been so thrilled with the way that it's gone down in the UK and the way men have responded to it as well as women. I hope people here like it. And I think a British rural upbringing in the 70s is so sort of nostalgic and different. It's got a touch of the Enid Blytons about it, you know, a bit of Famous
Yes.
Five kind of rollicking around and just kind of madcap adventures. Every time my father appears, you know that chaos will ensue. A bit of that.
I did discover that. Yes, I did, Claire. So, well, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it, Claire.
Thank you very much, Mark. Lovely to talk to you.
Award-winning broadcaster of the BBC, Claire Balding, talking about her book, My Animals and Other Family, here on Derby Day. Quite a fascinating look at growing up in the English countryside with lots and lots of horses and dogs, a fun romp and memoir that you can find where books are sold and find a link to on our website, wvxu.org.